Selene Cook and I cordially welcome you to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing and I sing lots of contemporary and experimental music and I do performance and all of that. And it's a great mixture of classical singing and avant-garde singing. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekurke.de. I cordially welcome you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter. And in this podcast, I talk about themes all around contemporary and new music. I share with you behind the scenes insider knowledge and I bring you the human beings out of this great music world closer. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung, a very important German-speaking music paper. You can actually have it in print and in online digital. In today's episode, I talked to the composer Lars Skoglund. And yeah, I really enjoyed this talk with Lars Skoglund from Oslo. And let's dive now into this interview with Lars.
Hello and good morning, Lars Skoglund, and welcome into my podcast today.
Thank you very much.
I would like to know first, how did you find your way into this new and experimental music?
I started playing guitar when I was 9 years old. I was before that already as a child. I can remember as I think I was maybe six. We had a tape recorder at home. Cassette recorder. I was taping music from the radio through the air, listening to whatever was on the radio. And I liked rock music very much. I wanted to play drums, but then I got a chance to learn the guitar at nine, and quite quickly was interested in hard rock, especially and guitar solos. Even if I only had an acoustic guitar at that time, but the hard rock music sort of led to even more noisy interest for more noisy expressions. I started to buy LPs and records and tapes when I was 10, 12, 11, 12. And I also had a neighbor, a second cousin, who had a lot of LPs. He had a lot of Pink Floyd LPs. That was very exciting for me then at that age. I taped them from him and listened very much to that. Also, I discovered the music of Frank Zappa. It was very important. Still listen to this day. And also finding music a lot on the radio, actually. It wasn't so much, but when there was something, I usually had a little cassette ready and a record. At 16, I went to high school. I had to move away from a small place called Hamarøy. And I had to move like 100 kilometers further north to Sortland. They had a high school with music, could take music lessons there. And then we started to learn about it more in music history. We had, I think actually our teacher didn't know so much, so we just played the records. We listened very much in the history classes. Yeah, I would say experimental rock was really the way in. And I also, when I was 15, we had this confirmation. I got some money and then I bought myself a four-track studio, a cassette studio that I used a lot to. I played in rock bands and made sort of normal songs for our bands, but also just experimented with whatever sounds I could record myself, turn the tape backwards and speed it up and down a little bit, things like this.
Great. And how did you then get into composing?
Yeah, it was already, I think I was already into the composing at that point. Maybe I didn't know it myself, but I started trying to write down music on note paper already at that age, in like 11, 12, 13 years old. I remember I bought a score, actually. I bought a score in, I think it was 14 or 15. It was a transcription of Tubular Bells by Mike Oldfield, which I also bought on LP the same day. And I wasn't maybe super fan of the music, but it was very nice to see it written down and just, it was very inspiring just to sort of see this link. And then when I bought my own, this studio I talked about, and started making little pieces there. And later I was it came on the market, software and computer programs you could then use to write notes and have them played back. I think I was 18, maybe first time I tried this, 19 years old. And that was super exciting, of course. But already then I was also a bit disappointed by the sound quality. I thought real instruments sound much nicer than these keyboards. Yeah, but I think I had dreams about becoming a composer from at least from teenage on. And I remember the first time I really had a strong experience of classical, or let's say orchestra music, was Stravinsky. We heard Petrushka and Le Sacre in music history, and I thought that was incredible music. I really loved it. And today I'm going to hear Le Sacre live, actually, this evening. No,
Oh.
tomorrow evening in Oslo.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah.
Great, great. And did you then also get to study then composition, or how did it develop further? I mean, you're doing so much now.
I then I didn't apply for anything. I remember after high school, I thought about, but it was still a bit far away, and it wasn't so, there was only one school at that time where you could study, and one academy in Oslo then. And I thought, I wasn't so sure. I went to study musicology instead at the university in Trondheim, in the middle of Norway. And there I was going to all the kinds of concerts that I could, and just sort of, yeah, continued learning about the music. And I had some teachers there who were also encouraging me. Came to them and showed them some my first tries. And yeah, they were very encouraging. And then I applied in Oslo, but I was not taken then. But then I had some friends who had went to the Netherlands to study music, to study jazz playing. Then in first they went to Amsterdam, and one of them went to Rotterdam, and I applied in Amsterdam and Rotterdam, and I got in Rotterdam. And then I was already 25 years old, so I wasn't so young anymore. But then I had sort of tried to compose so much that I knew what I needed to learn more about. So that was actually, it was really, but it was in a way like coming home, to then come to the conservatory in Rotterdam, because it was really where I wanted, it could finally do what I really wanted to do.
Do you have the feeling that those first experiences with the bands and all this other more rock music is still influencing your composition style?
I think so, yeah. Especially, I mean, I was writing after my studies, then instrumental music and mostly chamber music or ensemble pieces. But like, I think 10 years ago from now, I started working with more with music theater and vocal music then. And then really this rock influences, I could make use of them, let's say, songwriting experience, because I have also had a songwriting band or rock music project parallel to the classical composing, and now it's sort of in the music theater, then these two lines sort of came together. That's how I see it myself.
So how is it for you writing for the voice? Because I know that some composers also struggle with it and some really love it, and because voice is also a very unique instrument.
Yes, it was. I tried sometimes. I remember we had one of the tasks we were given at my composition studies in Rotterdam was to write a piece for, I think it was supposed to be four singers or something, four singers and four instruments, I believe. And I think it took me a year to find the text that I wanted to use. I was looking and searching and going everywhere, and then I wrote one more piece. Then I used poetry by a poet, actually a novelist that I like very much, a guy called Harry Matthews, American writer who died some years ago. But he was, I can talk a lot about him, but he was in this very interesting and strange group of writers in Paris called Oulipo. And I got permission to use some of his haiku poems, but that was the only times I wrote anything for voice, actually, because I was never really asked, and I didn't suggest it myself either. But then started another study after freelancing for I think 12 years. From between 2003 and 2015, I've only been freelancing after my bachelor's studies in Rotterdam, and then I started the master's in Oslo. And then we had a project to make chamber opera, and then I thought, what if I just write the libretto myself? Because I like to read, and I can maybe try to write something, and I can write song texts. So let's see how this works. And then it sort of was quite, I liked what happened. I wanted to do more of that, and yeah. So that my way in into the vocal music is actually through my own words. And I'm busy at the moment with a new chamber opera, and I made a whole project at an artistic doctorate in at the Academy here in Oslo some years back, where which was about music and text written by the same person, by me. And with a special focus on everyday life as a theme, let's say, a thematic area or field. So yeah, and then that has influenced the sound of what I do in a specific way by using everyday language, like say normal, yeah, how people talk really. Something I'd still write into the music, composed everyday dialogues and stuff. So there's always this sort of, sometimes I let have the performers speak to each other, and sometimes they sing, and sort of, and sometimes I have a sort of mixed in between feel like sprechgesang or similar, or sometimes they only sing on one tone and sometimes more melodic. But also all sorts of variations on this, but on the texts that are supposed to be like the dialogues between people. Long answer.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I mean, I also when I look at your biography, I mean, you seem like a very multi-talented artist, and also that
Nothing.
you write and you enjoy it, or that's your connection. And I mean, I also have had the pleasure to interview your wife, Christina Turgeson,
Yes.
and she also said that her approach is in many ways so different than yours, but you also enjoy talking about how you perceive it and how you approach it. And I find this interesting also writing own texts because especially with like music theater, I also know many colleagues that that's also, I mean, also Mozart. I mean, he was always looking for a good librettist or Richard Strauss or so. And because it's different if someone is a good author or writes great poetry, that doesn't mean that this stuff is working on stage.
Exactly.
And sometimes I also heard stories where, you know, some whatever famous writer wrote something and it was not helpful for staging it and putting it into a scene. And then sometimes they would, you know, leave things out and not compose it, but then the authors were a little offended
Yeah.
because they didn't use the text correctly and so on. And so if you find this, that it really comes together, it's great. But I also know quite a few composers in Germany who then also started writing their own text because they're like, I already see it on stage. I have this visual and I know what has to happen and what needs to be whatever sung or spoken.
Yes.
And so sometimes they end up with it, even though maybe they didn't think that they're even talented writing something. And
Yeah.
so I totally understand that. But
Yes.
your motivation, it seems, came from a different spot because you really enjoy writing. So it was not like out of a necessity you enjoyed writing and then you probably felt, oh my God, my text and music, that would be even greater. Because also there are some composers, they tell me if the text is too strong, they say, why should I compose it? It's already everything there. I cannot add anything. And so there are challenges in using
Yeah.
text or
Yes. And I see it as I mean, a text for the stage is not a finished text in the sense that a poem or a novel is. I mean, you can take down a book for and with the read the plays of Ibsen or whoever as a book, of course. That works good, but then you always I think a little bit about how would this look and how would this be, and it was made for that reason. And I think that the libretti that I make are, or the music theater texts are not to be read on their own just like that. It's at least not how I mean they're made to be with more. So it's a different type of text, really. I also don't always like to read song texts on LP covers. You have them printed, and it's I need to hear the music also with it. Here and there is a good one-liner, maybe, of somebody said something smart or something like that, but or a nice phrase, like a little jewel. But mostly it's not to be read on its own, for me at least.
That's also an interesting point because I also experience when people organize concerts, some of them like printing out the texts I sing and some don't. And I'm also not sure what I like because oftentimes when they have it, they just look into the program and they don't look at me. And I think sometimes it's maybe nice to read it afterwards to let it sink in. And also when we go nowadays, in an opera house, I mean, we have the subtitle somewhere, which is nice, but I also feel that I'm staring a lot at them, and I'm not sure if it also draws my attention away from what's really happening on stage.
I mean, I tend to actually be very concerned with the understandability of the words, to sort of, because it's a story, you know. I mean, I don't care. I one of my favorite pieces is Please Don't Plead by Pierre Boulez, and I don't know anything of what the text is about. I don't need to know it either, because it's I know it's Mallarmé, and I've read the translation, which I also didn't understand. But it's not necessary. But I think to see something I have made is really meant to, you're supposed to follow the story. And I'm also happy that they put these titles in operas, because the way of singing is not always, or the language, it's not always understandable for my ear if they sing in Italian, or even if they sing in Norwegian, they still maybe don't understand it. And I think your opera, you need to, not everybody needs, no, some people just like to listen to their voices and to be in the spectacle, and you still get the emotional impact of it, I think. But I feel bad if somebody tell me I didn't hear what they said. The best compliment I had was two old ladies who came to me. We understood everything. I'm like, yes,
Aww.
I made it.
And since I already mentioned it, you're like a multi-talented artist. I think you also paint, right?
I make drawings and I
Drawings.
color them.
And then the question is for me, if you have those areas, the music, the writing, and the drawings, how does it flow into your day? I mean, do you do everything on each day, or are there phases, or how do you do that?
I have here, I can show you, take always with me. I have a little book here called One Sketch a Day, which is like a visual diary. Your listeners will not see this now, but when I don't make a drawing, I take a photo with my mobile phone. And this is a drawing I made with my eyes closed. Something from a concert, touring abroad. Here is an animal I saw in the botanical garden. So, but I try to do this every day. I have a little dings booms in this book. And
Cool.
that's all I can manage with the drawing. Then the writing and the composing, it's that's my work, so I have to do it. But that's I see it nowadays as work. So I go to work to do these things.
When you write, it's already part of the composing, or are there situations you just write texts without music?
Not at the moment, no. I have done it a bit before in the past, but if I nowadays I only write for my project. But I'm in the middle of a big project now. I'm making a new chamber opera of 1 hour, I think. So all my efforts go into that. For what words are concerned, I'm looking for a place to perform it now, and partners and stuff. So having meetings about this at the moment, and I also apply for money financing. But I also write the instrumental music that is not part of the opera. I'm working on a piece for viola and live electronics. A good friend of mine, Hanne Skjelbred, commissioned a piece. She's a violist. I also want to. I'm trying to organize to release a record of my instrumental music. I'm in contact with a ensemble called Ensemble Ernst Sinfonietta here in Oslo, and they have said yes, and I have a record company who wants to release it, and I have now years of compositions to choose from, and I will also write a new piece for this record, I think. At least that's the plan. So
Wow, great things coming up.
yeah. Yeah, it's
What are
going
the
well.
qualities you most appreciate in the performers you work with?
I really like when they're just enthusiastic and engaged in what they do. To It's the best. Yeah, I mean, for the music theater project, I select people that I know can sing in a way I like, and to text pronounce the text and just have nice voices. I've worked with some super nice people.
Since you also have been around, I mean, you already mentioned the Netherlands, and before we started talking, I can let the people know that you speak very nicely German because you studied in Graz.
Thank you. I
And
didn't study in Graz, but I just lived there for 2 years because I had a
well, yeah, it's a beautiful city. I've sang there last year at the Elevate Festival.
Ah, good.
So I'm also curious, how do you perceive than the Norwegian music scene or contemporary music scene compared to the other scenes you were able to meet?
I think the scene in Norway right now is very, very strong. It's so much going on that I cannot go to all the concerts I would have liked to because there are so many of them. Especially here in Oslo, where I live, it's really, I think it we will think of it this as a golden age when we look back. It's a lot going on with new music and also with improvised music and free jazz and. It's also scenes that I follow and have even played a little bit on myself with some electronic synthesizer experiments. Yeah, it's just a good place and a good time to be at the moment, I have to say.
That's great.
Yeah.
And how do you approach time management, or are you very structured, or are you a more flowy person? How do you
Yeah.
get everything done you need to do?
Yeah, I try not to take on too many tasks. I've learned that in the past to not say yes to everything. And nowadays, it's not a bad thing, but I'm not asked very much, and that's quite okay because I have started initiating my own projects, which I never did before. I was always asked, and then now it's more in my own hands. And that's good. And I'm in the very lucky position to have a work scholarship from the state, the Cultural Arts Council. They have been very generous to me and given me a 3 year. I'm in the third of those 3 years, so what happens next year, I have to I don't know, really know what will happen then. But yeah, I'm just feel extremely lucky and privileged, actually.
So, did the scholarship you're on or this state thing help you to initiate your projects because you could more do what maybe still was, I don't know, living in your heart and needed to get out?
Yes, I mean it helps me to focus a lot on my projects. I don't need to go around and do other work. So yeah, it has really been a good help. But time management is still a challenge because you need to keep going and to have and to the fact that the project often is very way far into the future, then you need to sort of make little small goals on the way there to have meetings and workshops and to make sure that you progress. Can some it ha t tends to happen that I work very, very much on the last time before the deadline finally comes, so I try to be better in starting early. So that's a challenge still after all this time.
I mean, for me as a singer, usually also things come to me, and I also have something in Düsseldorf. I organize myself, and the city gives me some money. That is fun too. But the only time I was maybe in a situation like you was during COVID, because we had some scholarships for musicians, and there you could just, I mean, you should do something musical, but you could do what you wanted. And so then I also looked what were the things I always wanted to do, and then I just did, and that was great in a way. And
Wow,
yeah.
yeah, that was great. I remember first time. I mean, we have this option, a possibility in Norway to apply for they have it now has the status of a doctorate, artistic research projects that are usually 3 years. This is not the work scholarship, but it's something I did before that. And there it is, I mean, in a way like an artistic scholarship, but at the same time you also are supposed to be a research in sort of academic way. That means you write, produce reflection about what you do so that you can explain your methods or, I mean, whatever you want to focus on. And at the same time, create artistic work. And remember, first time I applied for that, I was suddenly faced with the question, okay, if you can do anything you like for 3 years, what will you do then? And I was like, oh. Because before that, I only been thinking about single pieces, you know, like composition for five instruments. Yeah, great. Oh, but now it's more, you have to think a bit bigger. And I didn't get it the first times I applied, but still, just writing down all these sort of dream projects was very helpful for making smaller projects again and in the coming years, because then I became aware of what I was interested in really and be able to communicate this in words.
And
So it's a
let's
good
get
thing
back to the
about.
question. You started out, are you more structured or flowy, or do you do things other than music? I don't know, walking around that keeps you balanced.
I cannot have too much structure because then I feel a bit claustrophobic and then I tend to just break the rules I have all set for myself to sort of sneak out a bit and go for a walk or. Then it's nice to have like draw to be able to make drawings actually because that's quickly made and you have a result very easily. I mean, if I write work now on my opera, then can write five sentences, but I don't know where in the big piece they will be, and I will take a long time before I can hear them, or I don't know what sort of it's. So it's nice to have these little options to make fast work, and I also do I make. Recordings in my home studio here and my workplace. And actually, 2 years ago, I released digitally an album of electroacoustic music. And that is also something I like to do quite spontaneously, just record some things on my with my synthesizers or with whatever sounds, concrete sounds, or and then build it together. And it can have this sort of ongoing backlog of unfinished projects.
It's more like
So
something is popping up in your head, and then you're able to sit down and say, okay, now this idea is here. I need to write it out. Or
Or make a little recording or a little demo. And then maybe the demo itself is good and interesting and possible to release. Or maybe I think, okay, this was a nice idea. What if I work a bit more on it and refine it and develop it further and make it, for example, longer or, yeah. But it's important for me to have this sort of, to be able to play and have fun with it. That's very important because it gets very serious. Anyway, so it's important to also to just do it as a thing to enjoy and yeah, I like to have a playful attitude in I mean we say that we play music.
I think it's awesome if it has this lightness. I think for some people it's not this way.
No,
But if
no.
you have this, it's adorable.
Yeah, I mean like I said, it is serious enough in many other ways, so I cannot have it too sad when I work.
Who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you, and what inspires you?
Have to say other music, really. It's hearing music and loving it and thinking, wow, this and thinking I want to do this too. I can maybe try to make something that is as great as this, or as nice and sounds as good, and gives me that, or gives somebody else that sense of joy. I think that was perhaps my biggest inspiration always. And with music, it was, hearing records first, and later going to concerts when I moved to places where there were concerts, because where I grew up, there was certainly no new music concerts. There were other things happening, and I could, you sort of had to make the music yourself if you wanted to hear it. That has also shaped my let's say practice, because actually when I look back at the first bands we had, me and my friends, I've only later found out that those who start to play music in groups, they learn their favorite songs and cover them. But we didn't do that. We made our own songs since the beginning. It was sort of natural because this band had that kind of songs, and the other band, Iron Maiden, sounded like Iron Maiden, and Kiss had Kiss songs, and this is sort of what we grew up with. And so it was just natural that when you play, you also make the music, we thought. And to sort of just create the culture, and we even made concerts that were, of course, very small and low key, but it was, people came and heard it, and there was a little note in the newspaper and local newspapers, and
It sounds like water that always finds its way. And I also grew up in a very small village close to Nuremberg. And it was obvious very early that I liked singing and I was singing quite well. But there was also nothing around, not in my village. And then my mother, she somehow convinced a woman who was doing some, I don't know, music classes or for children. And she's like, "You have to found a choir because my daughter needs to sing." And then
Great.
she actually did. And I went into this choir and there were other children. But the thing was then, I think it took a few months and then I kind of outgrew this choir. So I think the choir then still existed, but my mother then looked for a different place for me. And then she found a very good and very they were very high quality and doing professional stuff in Nuremberg. And that was then also they practiced in the or the rehearsals were in the opera house. And that was then when the opera house needed children for the children parts and whatever, Carmen, Turandot, La Boheme, and so on, they would get them from us. So then I was like 11 and I was standing on the opera stage of Nuremberg. So that turned out very well. But when you just mentioned it, it's like crazy how my mother found those things then for me. And also when I studied then in the United States after Munich, but I did my bachelor and my master's in North America. And it was a very, very expensive studies. And I got a little scholarship, then my parents gave a little, then, and the rest I had to get somehow together, which now looking back, I always think it was a big wonder in my life. And then it was also kind of an advantage that I was in this little village because then I gave a concert every time I was home in the summer in a church and no admission, they could give what they wanted. And then later on, we realized that was the smartest move I could because there were people like doctors and pharmacists. They would ever give me like big sums because they found it so exciting that I'm studying in the US. And that's maybe then the advantage of this smaller village because they were so proud. Oh, sure, my God, she's studying music in the United States.
That's true. It works like that. It can work like that.
And
Super. Great.
so I guess where someone wants to do something, somehow you find a way.
I saw one of your questions was, what does success mean for you? And I when people ask me this, I like to quote Neil Young. He says, "Success is to continue." It's that's the most important, to not to just don't give up and not stop, but just keep doing what it is. That's also, the other question you had was which tip to give to young artists. I think it's, in a way, it's difficult to give a general rule for, because what one person needs to hear, it can be bad for the other one. But I think talent is not so important. It's important is not to give up, and to also, it's at least if you want to do composing, it's good if you actually like doing it every day. Like, yeah, if you enjoy the writing process, to enjoy the work, and to also, of course, have an eye towards the result that you're aiming at, but that usually people are smart enough to understand anyway. So, yeah,
Yeah.
that's my thoughts about this.
And what does it mean for you to be true to yourself or authentic in this music business? And how do you keep true to yourself?
I've been so lucky that I could actually make a living of work that I think is quite personal. And I understood that quite early that I need to just be free and make what makes me enthusiastic, to have my own, let's say, curiosity on board, and to be able to go where that takes me, because otherwise it doesn't get any interesting. The good thing about dealing with contemporary art is that you are supposed to be yourself and be free, at least more or less. I think I have not had any experiences with curators who are interfering with what is being made. It's that, I mean, that's, we also don't have very big audiences. I wouldn't trade that with the freedom that I can feel, because it's a necessity, really.
Is this also the freedom that drives you forward?
The freedom is the room that I'm in. It's a necessity, but I don't know if it's a driving force. I'm not sure, but it just has to be there. It's like air that I breathe. I
Is
mean, some
there a
of it
driving
has to.
force?
Yeah, I mean, there is, because I have also had periods where I've had felt less of that driving force, and then not always know what to do. And I think it's sort of what I talked about before, is to have a kind of a vision of a work or a sound, a kind of reality you want to hear or see or experience, to sort of, and it's stronger than just liking it. It's really a sense of something that is necessary, and but this isn't always, that wish or that desire isn't always there, and then it can be quite hard to, at least for someone like me, to actually get something done, or I use very long time in crossing out and starting again from scratch and searching and not really finding. That's the more difficult side of it. And you never know when it gets difficult, or when things are just, when you're sort of finding what you're looking for. It also has to do with technique and knowing what you're doing, and but also it's also very exciting to not know everything what you do. So that's also why I like to do things that I don't really know so well, because then you also discover as you go along. Could be that I wanted to, or that I needed to start writing or using my own words in the composing, because I needed new challenges. That I've thought about that sometimes.
Yeah, you already answered my last question that I usually ask last, but
What is that?
I came up with another question. I'm kind of curious. Maybe it's a little personal, but maybe it's interesting for all the listeners. Because I mean, you are married to a composer. How is life with another composer?
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's right now, it's happening very much with her, my wife Christine Kjørgersen's work is very, very, she's very much in demand. We're traveling very much. When I can, I always travel together with her when she goes to festivals and performances abroad and also in Norway. And it's a lot of traveling, and I've had to try to develop methods to be able to work while we are on the road, which can be a challenge. But we get to see a lot of other music because when there's a festival, you don't only see your own concerts, but you try to go to as much as you can and also meet other artists and yeah, our organizers. It's very exciting life. It's really a good.
And do you talk a lot about your music, or is it more you're in a process and you're just doing your thing and then the piece is ready, or?
I sometimes don't like to talk so much about things that I am working on. It's a way of protecting them a bit. They are not always ready to see the light of day. They need to sort of grow a bit strong before I show them to anybody else. That includes my wife. Even though she's very supportive, she's also a teacher, and she's used to talking to students and so. But yeah. That's also my personality that I like to. Yeah, it can be dangerous to show too early work to somebody, even
Yeah, I totally understand.
yeah,
Sometimes
even
you
if
have
they
to
are
be
very
with
friendly
it
people.
on your own, and you probably, I mean, you seem to be also very intuitive, so that you will feel if you need some, I don't know, impact or mirroring or something, where like, where could this go?
Yeah, and it's good to have, and important to have people to talk about and to discuss things with and showing things to. It's very important, yeah.
Yeah, that sometimes happens also when I founded this podcast. I was looking for a title, and I wanted a title that had like new music in it, but also the live part or the living part, because I wrote it all in small letters, and so Leben, I mean, you know German, is then both the life and living.
Right.
And the cool, because I always knew it will be a little broader than just new music. And it was at a coffee house with two friends. And I was like, I don't know how to call my podcast. And then we kind of jumped around, and then suddenly one of those friends, she said this name, and I'm like, this is perfect.
Yeah. That's great.
Well, I thank you so much for this great conversation
Thank you.
and wish you a great day, and maybe we see each other around.
That would be great. Thank you.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.